Today, FOMO grips traders as inflation deflates for now. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news, and this is our weekly market update. Well, dangerous investor euphoria is now spreading like a rash on the belief, at least in the US, of a perfect soft landing as inflation is vanquished without a recession. Cash and hedges are out, replaced by demand for everything from small caps to meme stocks. Industrial shares are on a tear, junk bond spreads are narrowing, quants are ramping up treasury shorts, and everyone is piling into stocks. And of course, it's the holiday season, so what would you expect? How different from the recent talk about recession, as data on the surface at least suggests the US economy is thriving amid mounting evidence the Federal Reserve is beating inflation. On Wednesday, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said the Fed was not forecasting a recession and did not rule out another rate hike, saying it would follow future economic data. But they also said they would not hit their inflation target until 2025. More than half of the firms listed on the S&P 500 have reported second quarter earnings as of Friday, out of which 78.7% have surpassed analyst expectations. And all that optimism has sent the S&P 500 to the brink of its sixth advance in 7 months and pushed prices on the Nasdaq 100 to almost 35 times profit its manna for bulls, even as it leaves them with precious little wriggle room should anything in the economy or monetary policy not unfold as hoped. It's dangerous and consensus, but it's late July, so who feels like fighting it, said Peter Cha, head of macro strategy at Academy Securities. We're now at the stage where people feel obligated to fully commit capital. Hawkish Fed, not an excuse right now, and claiming a recession is hard to justify as well. Economic data keeps defying bearish predictions. Everything from gross domestic product to consumer confidence and hiring has beaten forecasts, and reports on Friday showed that the employment cost index had its slowest advance since 2021 in the second quarter, while the Fed's preferred inflation gauge posted the smallest increase in more than 2 years. The personal consumption expenditures price index decreased 0.2% last month after edging up 0.1% in May. The Commerce Department said food prices dipped 0.1%, while the cost of energy products increased 0.6%. For the 12 months through to June, the PCE price index advanced 3%. That was the smallest annual gain since March 21, and followed a 3.8% rise in May. Excluding the volatile food and energy components, the PCE index gained 0.2%, after rising 0.3% in the prior month. That lowered the year-on-year increase in the so-called core PCE price index to 4.1%, the smallest advance since September 21. The annual core PCE index climbed 4.6% in May. Now, economists had forecast the core PCE price index would gain 0.2% and rise 4.2% on a year-on-year basis, and they calculated that the super core increased 4.1% on a year-on-year basis, after rising 4.7% in May. This measure of services less housing is being closely monitored by policymakers to gauge progress on the inflation fight. In the 12 months through to June, the PCE price index advanced 3%. That was the smallest annual gain since March 21 and followed a 3.8% rise in May. You put all that together and you end up with the idea that this Goldilocks economy might continue for a little while, with inflation clearly coming down, said Scott Lander, Chief Investment Officer at Horizon Investments. The PCE price indices are the Fed's preferred inflation measures for its 2% target. The core PCE price reading in June was above the Fed's recent forecast of 3.9% for the fourth quarter of 2023. Even if activity growth continues to hold up a bit more than expected, we think a run of weaker inflation readings will convince officials to shelve plans for future hikes, with the Fed's next move likely to be an interest rate cut early next year, Capital Economics' Andrew Hunter said in the note. Thus, the good news on the economy is sucking more and more investors into risky assets. A steady expansion into speculative spirits has pushed equity positioning to the highest level since January 2022. Investors have a clear overweight exposure to stocks after long refusing to budge off their underweight positioning, according to Deutsche Bank. At the same time, a wide array of hedging metrics is showing low demand for downside protection. Put premiums for both Invesco QQQ Trust Series 1 and the SPDR S&P 500 ETF Trust are hovering around the lowest levels in at least a decade, according to RBC Capital Markets. Additionally, investors are buying more calls to chase the rally while spending less to protect their gains. The market is just not ready to let go of the positive narrative. Hedging is outrageously cheap, said Amy Wu Silverman, head of derivative strategy at RBC Capital Markets. There's more driving of demand of calls from folks who are underperforming than those who have done well and need to hedge. While bullish bets are paying off for now, all the optimism strikes some as worrisome, given the litany of hazards that still face investors. Markets show their skittiness on Thursday, for example, when the prospect of a mild policy tightening in Japan knocked the S&P 500 down more than 1% intraday, although the drop was rolled back in the next session. Count Brent Schutt, Chief Investment Officer at Northwestern Mutual Wealth Management, is among those who say the euphoria has been taken too far. He recently revised equity positioning from overweight to neutral while moving to overweight bonds, and says a recession is still well within the realm of possibility. Those same people who are probably piling in right now were wrong about their outlook 9 months ago, and now they're reversing course. He said, I'm pushing in the opposite direction. The equity market will have some difficult months ahead. The Treasury market has lately seen fast money shorts bets expanding, with hedge funds overall pushing up bearish wages to historic levels. Leverage funds have also been boosting overall shorts on US bond futures since March, according to a gauge of aggregate net positions based on data from the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. Fast money quants, known as commodity trading advisors, have been amassing a big short bet since May. JP Morgan Chase & Co. strategist estimates that they are sitting on around $150 billion. That's short bond positions that they may unwind in a rally. The flip side of the extreme shift is that negative surprises can have an outsized influence. In March, of course, banking turmoil caused equities to sink and treasuries to rally, forcing commodity traders advisors to unwind around $200 billion of bonds in the span of a few days, according to JP Morgan. A growth scare could reprise that episode. Nevertheless, it will be hard to stop the market momentum. Strategists have revised upward their S&P 500 targets, and economists are softening their dire predictions. Some of the biggest downside risks threatening the economy, inflation rising to a four-decade high, a looming recession, etc., have since faded. It would require a massive rally in bonds that would probably only occur with some sort of growth scare from a data shock, said Charlie McGilliatt, cross-asset strategist at Nomura. We have seen economic growth data hold, labour staying firm, and even US housing recovering. Fundstrat Global's Tom Lee said the July data reinforces the view that inflation is on a glide path lower. And this matters because the Fed is data dependent, and we see these as supporting the case for a pause past September. In fact, this leans towards July being the last hike of the cycle. So all three major US indices ended the week with gains after a slew of big tech earnings, economic data, and central bank announcements boosted investor confidence in a soft landing for the US economy. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.5% to 35,459. The S&P 500 gained 0.99% to 4,582. And the NASDAQ Composite added 1.9% to 14,316. For the week, the NASDAQ climbs 2.02%, the S&P 500 rose 1.01%, and the Dow gained 0.66%. The gains gave the S&P 500 its highest close since April the 4th, 2022. In fact, most of the 11 major S&P 500 sectors posted gains, led by communication services, which gained 2.3% as big tech companies kept an upward trend after announcing earnings earlier in the week. Big tech, including Apple, Meta Platforms, Alphabet, and Microsoft racked up gains as Treasury yields slipped after the closely watched Fed inflation measure slowed more than expected. And on the earnings front, Intel results and forecasts pointed to an improving PC market, sending the chipmaker's shares up 6.6%. Intel's ongoing improvement in margins is expected to continue in the fourth quarter, Deutsche Bank said, as a wide array of headwinds abated and tailwinds are emerging, including revenue scale, cost cutting, and selling PRQ's products, which refer to early product stocks of upcoming launches. Peers, Nvidia, and Marvel Technology also gained 1.85% and 1.6% respectively. And on Thursday, the blue chip Dow snapped its longest winning streak since 1987 as US Treasury yields pressurized stocks after news that the Bank of Japan will allow long-term interest rates to rise. The Bank of Japan made its yield curve control policy more flexible and loosens its defense of a long-term interest rate cap in moves seen by investors as a prelude to an eventual shift away from massive monetary stimulus, and we made a show on this the other day. The yield on the US 10-year note slipped from 4%, which was hit in the previous session, lifting mega cap growth and technology stocks sharply higher. The 2-year was at 4.885. Procter & Gamble climbed 2.83% after the consumer behemoth beat analyst estimates for quarterly sales, and Ford Motor Company shed 3.42% after Chief Executive Jim Farley outlined a change in the automaker's product strategy, slowing the ramp-up of money-losing electric vehicles. In fact, Ford pushed out its target to reach 600,000 unit EV production run rates to 2024 from the end of 2023. Enphase Energy fell 7.48% after the solar inverter maker's third quarter revenue forecast missed expectations, while Juniper Networks tumbled 6.94% as the network operator forecast third quarter revenue below market estimates. ExxonMobil fell 1.19% after the oil giant posted a 56% slump in quarterly profit, while peer Chevron shed 0.5% after forecasting annual production near the low end of its previously estimated range. And Rita Pharmaceuticals surged 54.02% after Biogen agreed to buy the rare disease drug maker for nearly $6.5 billion. Oil caught the mood too, given the non-stop chanting from Saudi output cuts, forecast beating US economic data, and fewer Americans filing unemployment claims despite moderating jobs growth. Oil has little reason, in fact, not to rally. New York traded West Texas Intermediate, or WTI, along with London-based Brent Oil, both finished up for a fifth straight week, riding the rhetoric that supply was getting critically tight versus demand, although weekly petroleum data from the US government barely supported that notion. But after a gain as much as 40% for July alone, the rally is beginning to show some strain. The market treaded water mostly on Friday before settling higher towards the end. Earlier, longs in the game appeared undecided on whether to take profits and re-enter with new positions on Monday or hold on hold for another week until next Friday's OPEC meeting, where more jawboning on oil prices was expected. OPEC knows it has a good thing going, and it's unlikely to pass up on the opportunity to use the halo again to drive home the messaging of the perma cuts by the Saudis, said John Cudliffe, partner of New York energy hedge fund Again Capital. Oil bulls also know that the cuts mantra will be echoing all of next week, and that explains why so few want to take profits in today's session. The Saudis have pledged to take an additional million barrels per day off their production for all of this month and possibly forever, if that meant keeping the price above $80 a barrel. Despite the widely bandied production cut numbers, weekly petroleum inventory data released by the US government actually showed a market getting by each week with more supply than thought, as well as light demand for fuel in what ought to be a runaway consumption for the summer. On Friday's close, WTI for delivery in September was up 0.72% to $80.67, and the US crude benchmark hit a new three-month high of $80.69 during the session, extending Thursday's peak. For the week, it rose 4.6% after a cumulative gain of 11.4% over four prior weeks. With just another session left for July, WTI was up 14% for the month. Brent for October delivery settled up 0.6% at $84.29 a barrel, and the global crude benchmark finished the week up 4.8%, adding to the prior four-week gain of 9.8%. For July, Brent showed a gain of more than 12%. Gold prices rose on Friday as well, recovering a measure of recent losses as the Bank of Japan caught markets off guard with some hawkish signals, although strength in the dollar limited the appeal of bullion. Copper prices also rose on Friday, marking a stronger recovery than gold, as the diminished prospect of a US recession boosted the red metal. Copper also benefited from speculation over more Chinese stimulus. Gold futures expiring in August rose 0.68% to $1,958 an ounce, but while the yellow metal saw some relief on Friday, it was nursing steep losses from the prior session after data showed that the US economy grew more than expected in the second quarter. The reading boosted the dollar and pulled gold more than 1% lower, as traders bet that strength in the US economy will give the Federal Reserve enough headroom to keep interest rates where they are. The data also came out just a day after the Fed hiked interest rates and left the door open for at least one more hike this year, given that inflation is still trending well above the central bank's target range. Rising US interest rates bode poorly for gold, of course, and other metals, given that they push up the opportunity costs of holding non-yielding assets. The strong GDP reading saw gold wipe out all of the gains for the week, with the yellow metal now trading about 0.8% lower. Copper rose on hopes of no US recession, though. With China stimulus, copper prices did gain on Friday, recovering from steep losses in the prior session. While a stronger dollar initially dented the red metal, traders bought back into copper on the hopes that the world's largest economy will dodge a recession this year. Copper futures rose 1.49% to $3.9333 a pound and were trading up for the week. Copper prices were also boosted by the prospect of more stimulus measures in top importer China. Several top Chinese officials signaled this week that the government will roll out more policy support to help enliven a slowing economic recovery. And silver was last up 0.42% to $24.47, having slid in recent times from above the $26 mark back in May. European stock markets traded in a mixed fashion on Friday as investors digested a week of corporate earnings, important central bank decisions and economic data. The DAX index in Germany traded 0.39% higher. The CAC 40 in France rose 0.15%, while the FTSE in London traded all but flat. European stocks began handing back some of Thursday's healthy gains, although strong earnings from pharma giant AstraZeneca supported the UK market on Friday. AstraZeneca stock rose 3.5% after the drug maker delivered better-than-expected profits and sales in the second quarter, as a strong performance of its blockbuster cancer drugs helped offset the loss of COVID-19 vaccine sales. Elsewhere, Sanofi stocks fell 2.4% despite the French drug maker increasing its guidance for the earnings, and Vinci stock rose 0.3% after the French concessions and construction group reported a jump in its half-year core profit, and Amundi stock rose 0.6% after Europe's biggest fund manager posted better than expected quarterly net inflows. Swiss speciality chemicals maker Clariant, impressed with its second quarter core profit, helped by price hikes in catalysts as well as absorbents and additives. Sentiment was boosted on Thursday in the wake of the European Central Bank's latest policy setting meeting, which saw the central bank raise interest rates by 25 basis points to a 23-year high on Thursday. However, President Christine Lagarde did surprise the market by hinting that this tightening run, which currently consists of 9 consecutive rate hikes, could soon be coming to an end, but of course will be data dependent. Do we have more ground to cover at this point in time? I wouldn't say so, Lagarde said during the press conference that followed the most recent increase, while stressing that the ECB's decisions would depend on the incoming data. This followed the Federal Reserve also raising interest rates on Wednesday, of course, while the Bank of Japan's surprising move to shift the boundaries of its yield curve control policy potentially slightly signals tightening of its very loose monetary policy. And data released earlier on Friday showed that inflation in the German state of North Rhine-Westphalia, the country's most populous state, rose 0.2% in the month in July. That's an annual rise of 5.8%, well below the 6.2% expected. And additionally, French annual inflation came in at 4.3% in July, a drop from the previous month's 4.5%, while the Spanish equivalent climbed to an annual 2.3%. That's still well below most of the other countries in the Eurozone. French gross domestic product also climbed 0.5% in the second quarter, an improvement from the revised 0.1% growth in the previous quarter, and also better than expected. Asian stocks fell on Friday, with Japan's Nikkei logging steep losses after somewhat hawkish messaging from the Bank of Japan, while Chinese shares outperformed on hopes of more stimulus measures. Broader Asian markets also came under pressure from data showing that the US economy grew more than expected in the second quarter, which spurred concerns that the Federal Reserve will have enough economic headroom to keep raising interest rates. This came after the central bank kept the door open for more rate hikes later in the week. The Nikkei 225 slid 0.47%, while the broader topics lost 0.9% after the BOJ said it would carry out its yield curve control operations with more flexibility by allowing bond yields to fluctuate more outside its target range. Losses in both indices were broad-based, with only financial and utility sectors trading positive. While the BOJ still kept interest rates at negative levels, Friday's move marks a step towards the potential end of the ultra-loose monetary conditions enjoyed by Japanese stocks for nearly a decade. The prospect of a dovish BOJ has driven stellar gains in Japanese stocks throw over the past 2 months, but local stocks are now expected to see some capitulation. The BOJ's move was also spurred by sticky Japanese inflation data on Friday, showed that inflation in Tokyo grew by more than expected in July. Losses in Japan spilled over into broader Asian markets, with South Korea's KOSPI rising just 0.17%, while India's Nifty 50 slid after hitting record highs earlier in July. And Chinese stocks were the sole outliers for the day, logging strong gains as government pledges of more stimulus measures saw investors piling into heavily discounted markets. The Shanghai Composite Index rose 1.84%, Hong Kong's Hang Seng added 1.31%, also taking support from locally listed Chinese stocks. Real estate stocks were a particular source of support for Chinese indices after the government vowed to roll out more policies to support the embattled sector. Property stocks also recovered sharply after recent losses. And top-level Chinese officials have signalled this week that they will roll out more policy support for the economy, as recent data showed that growth slowed sharply in the second quarter. The vows attracted a slew of foreign investors into Chinese stocks, which were also trading at sizable discounts to their Asian peers for the year. Global hedge funds snapped up Chinese equities following the Politburo's meeting this week, buying on Tuesday at their fastest pace since October 2022, according to Goldman Sachs. The higher inflows were led by mainland A shares and then Hong Kong listed shares, while US listed Chinese American depository receipts, mainly internet companies, saw smaller inflows, the report added. They did not give any further details on the volume, but highlighted that inflows were driven by long buys and to a lesser extent short covers. Sectors including consumer discretionary staples, financials, materials and industrials attracted the largest purchase by hedge funds, tracked by Goldman Sachs. Global investors have been pulling out of China in the past few months, worried about the slower than expected post-pandemic economic recovery and renewed Sino-US tensions. Goldman Sachs said hedge funds' exposure to Chinese equities remained at around the lowest levels last seen in November 2022 and well below five-year averages. Sentiment, however, appears to be picking up in July. Net foreign buying in mainland Chinese equities through the China-Hong Kong Stock Connect program recorded 20 billion yuan so far this month. That's their best month since April. Now, Australian shares were swept up in the volatility that struck Asian markets on Friday afternoon after the Bank of Japan said it would take a more flexible approach to managing its yield curve control policy. The S&P ASX 200 dropped 0.7% to 7,403, but the benchmark still managed to post a weekly gain of 1.2%. Australian retail spending fell 0.8% last month, according to the latest data by the ABS, and again we made a show on that, well below market expectations for turnover to be unchanged. Market pricing of a cash rate rise next week inched lower, with traders ascribing a 3 in 4 chance the RBA will leave rates on hold on Tuesday when they meet again. The major banks are divided on what the RBA will decide. CBA and Westpac tipped a 0.25% increase, but ANZ and NAB are expecting another pause. The big four finish low, with CBA down 0.97% to $105.50, Westpac dropped 0.31% to $22.28, ANZ dropped 0.08% to $25.76, and NAB eased 0.32% to $28.38. Iron ore traded in Singapore down 0.34% to $112.45 a tonne on the September futures contract, reversing gains from earlier in the week that were triggered by hopes of stimulus in China. Fortescue Metal dropped 5.4% to $21.68 a day after releasing its quarterly production updates. Rio Tinto declined 1% to $116.62, and BHP tumbled 0.8% to $45.80. Gold miners were also among the biggest laggards, as a stronger US dollar weighed on the price of the precious metal. Regis Resources declined 8.3% to $1.71, and West African Resources fell 5.3% to 89 cents. PointsBet jumped 1.5% to $1.68 after announcing it expects to be profitable by next financial year, and Chief Executive Sam Swan said the business will focus on growing PointsBet Australia's revenue and winnings after selling the US business last month. SiteMinder soared 21.5% to $4.29 after the company said it expects to be profitable in the second half of the financial year off the back of strong revenue growth and a cut in spending. And ProMedicus firmed 2% to $68.28 after Goldman Sachs upgraded the stock to a buy rating with a price target of $76. And the Aussie was at 66.50 cents against the US dollar and a weak 51.73 against the pound. And finally, Bitcoin is still bouncing around below 30,000 US, with little expectation of significant shifts, at least in the short term. So you can see here that there is a considerable question now. If everything goes as the market is hoping, and the market is priced for perfection, with a soft landing in the US and maybe elsewhere, then maybe the values on stocks are appropriate. But everything has to go exactly right, and the risk of a downside surprise is building considerably, not helped of course by the fact that people are away now in the Northern Hemisphere over the next month or so, and the Federal Reserve doesn't meet again until September. So there is significant risk of people getting sucked into this updraft and then getting caught in the autumn. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.